All right, I will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order and ask Mr. Dockendorf to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney present.
Representative Elkins. Representative Haley.
Haley here.
Representative Kegel.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lislegard. Representative Lucero.
Lucero here, ready to serve.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson. Representative Tice. Representative Elkins. And Representative Lislegard. A quorum is present.
Before we get to our first item, I see Representative O'Driscoll's hand is raised. So Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, in this Zoom world that we're still in, I received a message just moments ago from Representative Tice. She will be here shortly. She's having technology issues with her system restarting for her weekly update on her system. So there we go.
Delightful. And I see Representative Elkins is here.
I needed a bio break.
There you go. And I see Representative Tice is now on.
I am. And, thank you.
I know that I got a text from Representative Richardson that she's also having tech issues. So we have a lot of people who are having trouble, and I know Representative Lislegard is going to be a little late today, but he will be here eventually. So we do have a quorum, even with all of that, and our first item of business is approval of the minutes from February 23rd, 2022. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the February 23rd minutes.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon moves approval of the minutes from February 23rd, 2022. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 23rd, 2022 are approved. We have two bills on the agenda today that both relate to healthcare in Minnesota, the first of which is House File 11, authored by Chair Schultz. Chair Schultz, welcome back to the Commerce Committee. I will move House File 11 be referred to the Taxes Committee. And I understand you have the A26 amendment, Representative Schultz.
Yes, I would like to have that amendment moved, and then I can discuss as amended.
I will move the A26 amendment. And Representative Schultz, if you want to describe the amendment.
So the amendment just makes some technical corrections based on technical assistance from Insure, and it updates some grammar.
Wonderful. Any discussion to the A26 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Schultz, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members, for hearing House File 11. I know you heard a similar bill last year. This bill makes some modifications. We passed part of House File 11 last year in fixing the family glitch, meaning allowing people who can't get affordable family coverage through an employer are allowed to purchase the Minnesota Care product. This bill extends coverage in Minnesota Care to individuals in Minnesota who qualify. Individuals like entrepreneurs, farmers, small business owners and their employees, people who cannot find other affordable coverage on the individual market. And it does that so it's implemented in 2025. And there's also language in the bill that establishes a bridge of subsidies for both cost sharing if individuals buy a gold plan on the individual market and premium subsidies if the current federal subsidies are ended at the end of this year. It also has a section in the bill that provides assistance in the form of a tax deduction to small businesses who provide coverage to their employees for 2 years until Section 10 is enacted, which is creating a directing the commissioner to create a public options for small employers, those who have 50 or fewer full-time employees. So that's the essence of the bill. And I just want to tell you how important it is to have extend coverage to more Minnesotans. Currently, we have about 4.5% of the population who are uninsured. And so we're really close to covering everyone in Minnesota, and this could get us there. And most Minnesotans, over 90%, when surveyed, believe that all Minnesotans should have access to health care. So that's most of the people you represent in your districts. And to get there, I think if we all agree that everyone should have access to essential health care, the question becomes, how do we do that? How do we pay for it? How do we get there? And according to a latest survey by Minnesota Public Radio, over 70% support something like a public option or this Minnesota Care buy-in proposal, even 63% of Republicans surveyed. So a lot of Minnesotans fully support something like House File 11. And Republicans usually have concerns, typically, of having the government intervene and provide coverage. And Democrats have some consternation about having market-based approaches to healthcare reform. This proposal is a combination of public subsidies to those who qualify who are low income and private provision of healthcare, because the Minnesota Care product, something we've had for over 30 years that was created with bipartisan support, is essentially private coverage and access to private healthcare providers. So this is one approach that has garnered a lot of support nationwide as well. Currently, even older individuals, those who want to retire early, and we're seeing early retirements more recently, of those aged 50 to 64, according to the AARP, 66,000 in Minnesota purchase individual coverage. So really, we're also providing an option to those who wish to retire early, because right now we see a lot of people who are forced to work to continue their coverage until they're eligible for Medicare. So I'm going to stop there, Chair Stevenson, and I can always talk about more details, but I believe in this committee, this for jurisdiction, sections 1, 2, 10, and 12 of the bill are related to commerce and regulation. And the other sections were discussed in Health Finance and will be discussed in the Taxes Committee after this committee stop. And I believe I have two testifiers, and I know there are probably more testifiers that may be opposed to the bill. I will just mention that we have letters of support, one letter signed by over 30 organizations. So I encourage members to read that letter.
I have good news for you. You have one extra testifier, more than you thought. You have three, but you are correct also on the jurisdiction of this committee and how we're limiting discussion to sections 1, 2, 10, and 12. That was part of the posting for today's hearing. We will move now to the testifiers, starting with Lauren Gaffney. Representative Driscoll, I see your hand is raised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those who maybe aren't familiar with sections that you mentioned, could we get just a quick recap so that folks know why there may be conversations on some of the things that Representative Schultz spoke about and why there may not be conversation by members on some of the others? Just again, as kind of an overview for those who are joining us who maybe don't do this on a regular basis.
Representative Schultz, I can pull up the bill, or if you wanted to describe what those sections do.
Yep, I can talk about Section 1 is just the cost-sharing reductions. These are $75 premiums for those who purchase the gold level in years 2023 and 2024. That's the bridge until the buy-in is implemented. And then Section 2 is the premium subsidy of $125 per month for the years 2023 and 2024. For individuals who are eligible for that premium subsidy if the current federal subsidies expire at the end of the year, which they're will expire unless there's federal action. And then section 10 of the bill is the small employer public option, directing the commissioner to establish a small employer public option with a tax advantage. And then section 12 is just to requesting federal approval and waivers to enact the bill.
Representative Driscoll, does that satisfy your inquiry?
I just want to make sure that those who end up participating, you know, for maybe their first time or one of their first times, that they understand how their legislature works.
Yep. No, appreciate it. All right. So the first testifier from the author is Lauren Gaffney from the Main Street Alliance. Ms. Gaffney.
Hi there. Hello, Chair Stevenson, members of the committee. So yes, my name is Lauren Gaffney, and I'm actually the general manager of Mastel's Health Foods in St. Paul. I've managed the store for the last several years since the owner retired. We've been open since 1968. We're the oldest health food store in the Twin Cities. Healthcare access and affordability has been a big issue for us since day one. We have three full-time equivalent and 11 part-time employees at the moment. Some of us spend over $500 a month on our healthcare, and others just go without because it is completely unaffordable. As a small business that's been a staple of the community for over five decades, we understand the importance of creating a supportive environment for our employees, just like the relationships we build with our community members. We also understand the importance of taking care of your health. Because of the nature of our business, we have customers who come in specifically because they don't have healthcare coverage. We would love to be able to say, go to your doctor, and then we'll complement what your doctor says, because we are not doctors, but many people truly can't afford it, can't afford to get sick either. Navigating options for providing healthcare as a small business is almost impossible. We're limited to a good plan that costs way too much, or a plan that's only slightly more affordable but very costly to use. In the 11th hour last December, we were able to draft a QCERA plan with the help of a broker to find an affordable management company to handle reimbursements. The QCERA is allowing us to give a monthly stipend that full-time equivalent employees can apply to individual coverage. The business is paying for this out of pocket, but it is necessary to retain key employees. The small business buy-in in this bill would give us another option to ensure our employees can get really good coverage. And until then, the individual subsidies would help our employees who aren't covered currently by the QCERA. The small business tax credit would allow us to keep this QCERA or even expand the plan. For those reasons, I would ask that you find a way to please figure out how to fund and support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And then, Representative Lucero, I see your hand is raised. We're going to stick with our usual practice of waiting to the end for questions unless you have...
Yes, that's what my intention was.
Okay, thank you. The next testifier is Elizabeth Linish. Ms. Linish.
Hi, Chair Stevenson and members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Linish. I live with my wife, Claire, and our 2.5-year-old in St. Paul. My wife has run a licensed in-home daycare out of our home for the last 7 years. As a small business owner, she's never had access to employer-based coverage. 2 years ago, I left a job to enroll at Luther Seminary, where I'm training to be a pastor, which meant we turned to the health insurance exchange for healthcare coverage. With the help of a navigator, we determined that our baby would qualify for medical assistance, which has been a godsend. And we determined that my wife and I would need to buy a private plan on the exchange. We were eligible for some subsidies, which helped us afford premium payments, but we were only able to afford a high deductible bronze plan. It had a $6,900 deductible for each of us. So this was basically catastrophic coverage, and we had to pay out of pocket for all the healthcare we needed. When the American Rescue Package passed, our premiums dropped significantly, which was really important to us, especially since COVID resulted in a loss of more than $15,000 in the daycare income. So these federal subsidies were great, and they really made us wish that they had been available when we were shopping for coverage originally. Because if they had been, we could have purchased a lower deductible plan, which would have met both our budget and our healthcare needs. Because of the ongoing strain of the pandemic, Claire has decided to close her business in June. I'm now pregnant and will finish school in June. And so these two changes mean that our entire family now qualifies for medical assistance. But as we look ahead, we anticipate our income will rise again and we'll likely return to a private plan. When we do this, the subsidies can help us afford a lower deductible gold or silver plan, would make a huge difference in our budget. And we'd love to be able to buy into Minnesota Care, which is a program Claire has used in the past before we were married, and offer really excellent, affordable coverage for her. So with all that in mind, I ask you to support this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Linish. And next we have Mike Peterson from the Farmers Union. Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson, I'm sorry, we can't hear you. You're unmuted, but I don't know.
There, yeah, how about that?
There we go.
Well, it might have been to your benefit that you couldn't hear everything I say. Anyhow, thank you very much for the opportunity to present here today to and the committee. I am Mike Peterson. We live just outside of Parkville, Minnesota here. My family and I run an aggregation shop on the farm. So we do have small business here. We do have several full-time employees. And we try to run some part-time employees also. I'm here also representing Farms Union and support for a public buy-in option on Minnesota Care. We've had a health care scenario play out, I guess you could say. In 2012, our personal coverage with private provider was about $750 a month. And by 2015, that had hit about $1,600 a month. And our family hit a deductible of $6,500 twice that year. So we were a little north of $32,000 a year in health insurance costs that year. And if you do the math on a 2,040-hour work week year, that's a little over $15 an hour of our earnings that were going to health care. We got dropped down an hour on Minnesota Care. That's been great, but we haven't needed it. You can't plan the events if you're going to need it. But if we get just the bounce back and forth and income and whatnot, with the variability in owning a small business and also the variability in income on the farm, some kind of an option to buy in that would give us more of a level continued playing field personally would be great. Now, as an employer, I'd also like to try to provide health care for my employees, but the cost has been scary that way. The reason I want to try to supply some kind of benefits for my employees is we're 40 miles south of Metro, and I feel as I go through and train help and whatnot, and get them to be productive employees and skilled professionals in our field, about at that time of experience that they're able to recruit towards the Twin Cities area and get to larger companies and whatnot with that can offer the health care because of their economies of scale. And I feel a lot of small rural communities and businesses like myself, we lose a lot of local craftsmanship and sense of community because people are forced to commute, whether it's the farmer's wife, or the employee themselves. So an option to be a part of something larger would be a very good advantage, I feel, to our businesses and farming. I can generally match the wage of loan benefits package. It's really cost prohibitive. So once again, I really appreciate the opportunity here to tell my story.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now move to public testimony. We have Bentley Graves from the Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Graves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I first want to thank Representative Schultz for the conversations we've had about this legislation. And I also particularly want to thank her for the couple portions of the bill that focus on the difficulty that small employers have had and currently have in gaining and keeping coverage for their employees. I think as all of you know, health coverage is an important benefit for employers to offer, both in terms of keeping their employees healthy and productive at work, but also in this very tight labor market as a tool to retain and attract talent. But we do have some concerns about kind of where this bill would land the plane, if you will, with regards to providing employers with access to different coverage options. And that's particularly around Section 10 with regard to the public option. And our concerns stem from the fact that this type of proposal, a public option, attempts to leverage the infrastructure of public program payment rates to provide a more affordable option for small employers, in this case, their employees. And the reason we have concerns about that is because those public program payment rates are much lower than what you would find in the commercial market. And the result of that is twofold. One, it raises concerns about ongoing challenges that we already see, frankly, with regard to access to services, healthcare services, particularly in Greater Minnesota, but then also leads to concerns about what would happen with regard to cost increases for those that are left in the commercial market. So while we have those concerns, I do nevertheless appreciate the focus that this bill puts on the challenges that small employers and employees have faced and continue to face, and want to continue working with Representative Schultz and this committee and others in the legislature to try and find a path forward to bring some relief, again, given how important this benefit set is to both employers and their employees. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to provide those comments today and provide this testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions you or others may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Our last testifier is Joel Euland. Mr. Euland.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Joel Euland. I'm the Associate Vice President for Public Affairs at UCARE. UCARE is a health plan serving more than 630,000 members in Minnesota. I'm also here today on behalf of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the Association for Minnesota's nonprofit health plans, including UCARE, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Health Partners, Medica, Sanford Health of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify about House File 11. I want to acknowledge Representative Schultz at the outset of my testimony. She has met with the health plans numerous times to discuss this bill, and we really appreciate that. In many respects, we share the same goals of identifying options for how to best serve Minnesotans. We continue to have several concerns and questions about House File 11. This bill has interactions with the small group market, the individual market, and the state public programs. It's important that actuarial modeling is completed on this bill to understand the potential unintended consequences to consumers of the individual and small group markets, because Minnesota Care is not a comparative insurance product to those on the commercial side. For example, Minnesota is a guaranteed renewability state. Health plans would be required to continue to offer our existing commercial product offerings in the small and individual group markets. If there is a significant shift of members from these products to a public option, the risk pool becomes much smaller for these products that are not participating in the public option. This could result in premium spikes for people who remain in those products. There would also be an impact to providers too, as Mr. Graves just mentioned. Providers will no longer be paid at commercial rates for these members. This could result in unintended consequences that we would want to better understand. And then finally, one of the issues that also is looming is what congressional action may be taken in this policy area. The Build Back Better Act, currently before Congress, continues the higher level of advanced premium tax credits and expands the federal reinsurance program for 3 years, It's unclear if these proposals are going to pass Congress or in what form they would if they do pass, but we would want to make sure we understand what interactions they may have and how they may impact our members financially. Once again, we appreciate the discussions that we've had with Representative Schultz, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Euland. We've now completed all public testimony, so we'll move to member discussion and questions. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for the bill author, Chair Schultz. I see in sections 1 and 2, you have a hard-coded premium subsidies. Section 1, you have a premium subsidy hard-coded in statute of $75. In section 2, you have a hard-coded premium subsidy of $125. And as I read the bill language, it looks like those premium subsidies are hard-coded for the years 2023 and 2024. And then in section 12, I see that there's a reference to household incomes greater than 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. And so when looking at these hard-coded premium subsidies, when looking at a hard-coded threshold of income, I'm wondering, when we take into consideration the incredible cost increases that hardworking Minnesotans are experiencing as a direct result of the Biden inflation, that skyrocketing costs of gasoline, housing, food, energy, and much more, do you believe that these hard-coded figures will be enough, again, given the Biden inflation?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. I would love to have a longer conversation about inflation, but I don't think Chair Stevenson would appreciate that in his committee. But I will say, I've been reading a lot, and part of it is a lot to do with the lack of competition and the consolidation in markets. But that's an aside that you and I can talk about later, Representative Lucero. So the premiums, I don't know if they'll be enough, but they are on the high end of what we estimated would be reasonable based on the data we have today. So I'm open to having those discussions with you. And we did request a fiscal note, and we are waiting for it. There is a fiscal note from this bill last year, but it's not valid given the changes we've made.
Representative Lucero, any follow-up?
That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Any other questions or discussion to the bill? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My thoughts are not really questions, maybe some more feedback and comment on the bill. Two things occur to me. Number one, when we're looking to shift a large number of people out of the private insurance market into the Minnesota Care Program, there's going to be some cost consequences and possibly some imbalances with premiums collected and the like on there. I would like to see, I know the bill doesn't necessarily call for that, but I think we need to know a little bit more, eyes open, what the impact on that's going to be, the anticipated number of folks. Do we also anticipate that we may have the same thing when we have the Affordable Care Act and other things? Do we have persons with pre-existing conditions that moved over, other kind of chronic conditions that moved over, and how would that impact or affect the bigger picture of things? Because this could be an experiment in ACA light, if you will, in Minnesota on this. Second thing is, as I was sitting here today thinking about the fact that this isn't the tax committee, but we do talk a lot about some of the subsidies that are available in the public plans that we're looking at on here. What would happen? And let's just think a little bit about this. What would happen if we were to take those same levels of subsidies and move those into the private market with a reinsurance program? We could actually combine some of the goals of this bill along with some of the goals of the next bill that we're going to be having on our agenda here today to get us to something that could actually be a good role model across the state, and not just across the state, but across the country. We know that the reinsurance program is very popular. As a matter of fact, we've got bipartisan congressional support on that. I do believe Mr. Bulin talked about a reinsurance program in the Build Back Better bill. So it seems to have both DFL or Democrat and GOP or Republican support. It doesn't seem like we have to be at opposite ends on this if we combine our best ideas and move forward with a reinsurance program and taking some of those other subsidies and or tax credits. Maybe we could have Minnesota with our $9.3 billion surplus, a way to be able to allow people to deduct, at least on their state returns, the premiums that they pay out of their pocket for health insurance. Final comment, we all know that with the federal premium credits, that the costs of rising insurance are being masked. And as soon as those go away, and they will someday, we're going to be right back at square one with higher premiums. It may not be the same group of people that are around the table today having the conversation, but it will be a group of legislators around the table having an age-old conversation. How do we fix this? I don't know that there's ever a permanent fix, but we do have to move along and take the best information that we have. Maybe we're getting close, but I think we're still a ways away from the right solution on here. A hybrid, again, reinsurance along with some tax deductions as well as some subsidies in the public sector may go an awful long way to helping a lot of Minnesotans out of a jam that they're finding themselves. Mr. Chair, as always, thank you for the opportunity to kind of give our team's wrap up here today.
Well, thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And before I turn it over to Chair Schultz for her closing comments, I'll just say that I appreciate your comments. We are going to have a discussion about the reinsurance program in a minute. I'll just note that that program, and I'll be saying this further, has always been described by its proponents as a bridge program. And I think what Chair Schultz is bringing to the committee today is perhaps the next logical step on the bridge to give people the opportunity to buy into a program that's very affordable, very effective, and very popular as we continue to move towards trying to find a way for everyone to have accessible and affordable healthcare in the state of Minnesota. Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and really appreciate those comments, Representative O'Driscoll. I think it sounds like we all share the concern of how unaffordable health care coverage is, and we need to solve that. And reinsurance, to me, is fine as a temporary solution, but it really doesn't get to the heart of the problem, which is what is driving health care costs, because we're going to continue to have this problem. And one of the great solutions in this Minnesota Care buy-in is that it gives more leverage and competition to change how we pay providers and provide different incentives. For example, you know, caring for the whole person's health or improving population health, improving outcomes and quality. And I think they could push the other plans to do more along those lines as well. But I do appreciate your concerns and we can't keep subsidizing it. We have to reduce the cost growth in healthcare and make real progress towards that. And this, I know I heard the concerns of Mr. Graves and Mr. Olland, but I do want to note that we are going to study how to pay providers. The reimbursement rates are not set. And I also am always concerned about adverse selection and risk selection and how that could destabilize health insurance markets. But I will note, we're talking about 4.5% of the population in Minnesota. It's not that many more people we need to cover, and I don't think that number will destabilize the markets, but I'm always happy to work with our health plans in Minnesota to figure out how we can avoid the problem of guaranteed renewability and eliminate plans that are no longer attractive to Minnesotans, and how we can move forward to make sure we don't destabilize the small group insurance market. So I appreciate everyone's time today, and I hope you can make a commitment to supporting pieces of the bill if you can't support the whole bill. And I'm open to working with all of you in making a stronger bill and making a bill that we can get across the finish line this year. Thanks, everybody, and thanks, Chair Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Chair Schultz. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 11, as amended, be recommended be referred to the Tax Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorf to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
Barr, no.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Davney.
Davney, aye.
Davney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Kegel.
Aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Lislegard, have you joined us? Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr?
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice?
Tice, no.
Representative Lislegard?
I don't think we have him yet. There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 11 is re-referred, recommended to be referred to the Taxes Committee. Thank you, Chair Schultz. We will now hand things over to Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon, because the next bill is my bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3717. Representative Stevenson, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move House File 3717 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Chair Stevenson moves that House File 3717 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. I understand you have an amendment.
I have a whole bunch.
All right.
I'll move the A8 amendment first.
Good. Representative Stevenson moves the A8 amendment. Mr. Chair, to your amendment.
The A8 amendment deletes section 4 of the bill, which is the transfer from the general fund to the premium security account. In other words, this is how we fund the reinsurance program under the existing bill language. As we will discuss when we get to the meat of the bill, what we are trying to do today is reauthorize the reinsurance program so that the federal waiver can be approved. That needs to happen on a timely basis. The Department of Commerce has informed us that in order to have an operational reinsurance program in the fall, we need to do that by the beginning of April. We do not have to fund the program by the beginning of April. We just got a budget forecast yesterday, which is very significant. There's a lot of pieces in the air and a lot of discussions that need to be had. So I don't think today is the day that we should make a decision about how to fund and to what amount to fund, whether we should fund 1 year or multiple years. Those are decisions that we will make as the session goes along, but we don't need to make them today. So I'm asking the committee to remove the funding session for the moment, section for the moment.
All right. Members, any discussion to the A8 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the A8 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would move the A13 amendment.
Good. Chair Stevenson moves the A13 amendment. Mr. Chair, to your amendment.
Madam Chair, this amendment includes a bunch of language that makes clear that the program is contingent upon federal approval of the new waiver, which I was just discussing. It also does include a appropriation to the basic, to the healthcare access fund for the basic health plan, MinnesotaCare. Members who have looked at reinsurance for many years will understand that the federal government decreases its funding for the basic health plan by an amount that it then gives to our reinsurance program. So MinnesotaCare is harmed because reinsurance exists in Minnesota. And we want to make sure that that program is kept whole. It's very important, very effective, very popular. I will note that this transfer may also be contingent in the end because CMS is, the state is trying to get CMS to change the rule around this so that the basic health plan is held harmless in the reinsurance formula. I will also praise Congresswoman Angie Craig, who is sponsoring legislation that was part of the Build Back Better package that would have done this. So that's another reason why we can all hope that Build Back Better will pass. But I would ask for members to support the A13 amendment.
Okay. Members, any discussion regarding the A13 amendment? And seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A13 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would move the A2 amendment.
All right. Chair Stevenson moves the A2 amendment to your amendment.
Madam Chair, the A2 amendment makes a change to the statute related to the BHP. It currently reads that the actuary value of that plan will be at 94%. I am proposing to make it no less than 94%. So it's no longer a fixed target, but rather a floor. That way, if funds in the BHP permit a higher actuarial value, they are not restricted from doing so. I don't know any reason why we would want to prevent MinnesotaCare from being a program that serves Minnesotans better. So I think this is a common sense change, and I'd ask for member support.
Members, any discussion regarding the A2? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye. No.
The motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I would move the A4 amendment.
All right, Chair Stevenson moves the A4 amendment. Chair Stevenson, to your amendment.
Madam Chair, the A4 amendment is essentially House File 633, authored by Representative Bierman. We heard this bill on an informational basis a few weeks ago. We also heard it and voted on it last year and passed it out of this committee onto the Health Finance Committee. I believe it was also part of the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill that passed the full House last year, although it did not make it out of conference. This bill creates a stable copay option for people related to prescription drugs. It's an important bill because while reinsurance is useful in holding down premium increases, it doesn't do anything on other elements of out-of-pockets, deductibles, copays, cost sharing. And of course, people don't just pay premiums, they pay all those out-of-pockets too. And all of that factors into the affordability of healthcare. So this is an important way that we can make it more affordable to be in the private market. And I'd urge members to support the A4. We're on A4? Yes, A4.
Yes, A4. Members, any discussion to the A4? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted.
The next amendment that I would offer, Madam Chair, I would move the A7 amendment.
Okay. Chair Stevenson moves the A7 amendment. Chair Stevenson to that amendment.
Madam Chair, the A7 amendment also tries to get at affordability issues in the individual market. It requires that plans that are participating also offer a platinum level plan. Currently, plans offer bronze, silver, and gold plans. Platinum plans have an actuarial value of at least 90%, which means that the plan covers 90% of the cost, and the rest is borne in the fashion of copays and deductibles and other cost sharing. As I was just alluding to, reinsurance ensures that premium increases are not severe, but does nothing for the other out-of-pocket costs. We want to make sure that people have affordable healthcare options throughout, not just on the premium side of the equation. Plans in Minnesota used to offer platinum plans. They stopped, I'm told, because they were not very popular, but that was before the subsidies were dramatically expanded by the federal government. So it would be my hope and expectation that they might be more popular these days. And of course, this does not require the plans to price those platinum plans at any amount, just that they be offered. So I think it's a reasonable amendment and it should help Minnesotans. And I ask for member support for the A7 amendment.
Members, Representative O'Driscoll does have his hand raised to this amendment. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill author and the chair's point about, should the subsidies go away, I think there's a better chance that the subsidies will go away and we will see a non-use of the platinum plan. The crux of what we're looking at is not more higher priced premium plans. Again, it's the affordability. So not quite sure why we're putting platinum in here, knowing that most people wouldn't be excited about purchasing that or have the capacity to pay. Again, let's remember who the reinsurance market is focused at. It's focused at those people who don't have Medicare, those people who maybe don't have a public plan, those people who don't have employer-provided health insurance. They may be small businesses, family farms, your local mom-and-pop operators that are trying to eke out a living in their community. They're trying to find a way to be able to afford coverage. And while they don't have to have it, by mandating it doesn't really seem to be solving a problem. It's just putting more words into the statute from my perspective. So again, I would recommend a no vote on this because the platinum really doesn't do anything.
Chair Stevenson, would you care to respond?
Yeah, I would. I disagree very strongly with my friend, Representative O'Driscoll. I think that we can speculate that the subsidies are going away, but they are here today. And Minnesota should have the opportunity to take advantage of those platinum plans. Doesn't require anyone to buy a platinum plan, doesn't require the plans to price them at any level, just requires that they be offered. And I think that Minnesotans deserve the opportunity to buy those plans if that's what they want, and particularly if they're affordable with the subsidies as they currently exist in the marketplace. So this is just about giving Minnesotans more options, doesn't expand government or cause anything else. I don't see any reason why anyone should oppose this amendment.
Representative O'Driscoll, you have a follow-up?
Nope, I just question the fact that the platinum plan's in there. Is a plan that no one's going to buy. Again, I speculate that no one's going to buy on the affordability of this. So
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, members, any further discussion to the A7 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
No.
No.
The motion prevails and the A7 amendment is adopted. Next is one of my own amendments. So I will move adoption of the A9 amendment. Members, the A9 amendment modifies the makeup of the board of directors of the Minnesota Premium Security Plan to include more directors that can represent the public, including the Commissioner of Commerce, the Commissioner of Health, the CEO of MNsure, four directors that are selected by the majority and minority of the House and Senate, and two directors selected by the Commissioner of Human Services. Is there any discussion regarding the A9 amendment? Representative Woodruff-Skull.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and the author of the amendment. As if insurance isn't political enough right now, with different ideas, different plans, and not really being able to produce anything that's providing permanent solutions, I suspect that by replacing the MCHA board and oversight board with more political appointees is going to cause it to be more political instead of less political and getting Minnesotans' insurance issues resolved. And I would recommend a no vote to not to support non-politicalization, there we go, of the insurance programs any more than they already are.
Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support your amendment. I think we adopted this amendment, or a version of it, in committee last year. When we looked at the reinsurance program, I think the board is overdue for some reform, and I think this is a common sense approach to add some more voices to the discussion, so I support it. Ask members to vote yes.
And Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry if this was addressed. I had to take a phone call. I would like to ask, what problem are you trying to solve in changing the composition of the board?
Thank you for that question. Really, we just feel that the public, the Minnesotans, should have an additional avenue for their voices to be heard. So in particular, in response to Representative O'Driscoll's concern, as far as politicization of the of the board, I think that having appointees from the Senate and the House, as well as the Commissioner of Commerce and the Commissioner of Health, I think that those are people who can help elevate the voices of Minnesotans to the table. And if there are concerns, they're just additional people to kind of share those thoughts and add to consideration before making any changes.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just, I've been involved in this topic for my entire time in the legislature, and I just haven't heard any issues with the MSHA board before. So wanted to know what your thoughts were on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any further discussion on the A9? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Haley's point, if we go back to the original purpose of MCHA from the mid-1970s, which was an extremely successful program, ensuring a lot of folks here in the state of Minnesota who couldn't get insurance through the private market, then along came ACA, which kind of set that on its ear. And so it's a smaller and lighter version of itself today than it was back in the 1970s when it was the MCHA, the Act, and then became the Insurance Administration for that. We're going to have a board that's going to literally be full of all political appointees, either from the legislature or the executive branch. If I step outside of my role as an elected official and I look back at this, I go, do we get more progress or less progress with a bunch of political appointees at the table jockeying for what's their best political positions potentially versus the best outcome for the folks in the state of Minnesota? That was the beauty of the MCHA board. They were vetted. They were put on the board with their individual expertises and not necessarily their political prowess. So again, members, I strongly encourage a no vote on this. I know what we're trying to get more people to the table who have an interest. Representative Katizawatun, and I applaud you for that, but I don't know if this is the best way to make that happen. So again, no offense, but a no vote is, in my opinion, is the right vote on this one.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just looking at the language, and it looks, I mean, like you're adding people who are experts in this area. It looks a lot like the makeup of the OREC committee, with both appointees from the House and Senate majority and minority. And having served on the Opioid Advisory Council for the past 3 years, you can say it's a pretty good process, and having a lot of voices at the table sometimes makes you aware of issues that you wouldn't have been. And so I think updating the board is a good thing, and I support the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Cagle, for sharing your perspective. Members, any further discussion to the A9? I appreciate the feedback, and I would ask for your support on the amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the A9 amendment is adopted. Our last amendment is the A10 from Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A10 amendment. And what this amendment would do is, it's the Mental Health Parity and Substance Abuse Accountability Office. So it would establish that office within the Commerce Department. It also appropriates $500,000 to get that office up and running. And so this is one where, I don't know, I brought some props, but I don't understand why my provider charges $190, but my insurance company only covers $37 when I go to therapy. I don't get it. I still pay a $40 copay. It's in network, and I don't understand. And so, you know, this office would really make sure that our insurance companies are complying with mental health and with mental health and addiction parity in that we've already subscribed in law. And so we just need to make sure that insurance companies are complying.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this amendment, which I enthusiastically support and would ask members to support. You know, we made great progress by enacting parity laws at the state and federal level, but laws are meaningless if they're not enforced. And we know that mental health and substance use disorders are a key to many of the problems that we're facing as a society today. It's imperative that people have access to good mental health care and good substance use care. And so we really, really need to pass this amendment. I strongly support it.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Cagle. I certainly support mental health needs. We know that those have increased greatly during COVID all over our state, but I don't see that this relates directly to reinsurance. So to me, it doesn't fit in this bill. As you've mentioned, and Chair Stevenson mentioned, we did pass some legislation last session regarding parity. And so I just believe it's a separate issue in different bills and doesn't relate to reinsurance. And I also don't see the need to create an additional department in commerce in order to handle this.
Representative Cagle, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think when we're giving taxpayer dollars over to insurance companies, we want to make sure that we're getting what we're paying for. And so I just hope that we can pass this amendment. Thanks.
Okay. Members, any further discussion to the A10 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the A10 amendment is adopted. Representative Stevenson, would you like to explain the bill as amended or introduce testifiers?
I would like to talk a little bit about the bill, and then I do believe we have some people here who signed up to testify.
To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This bill, as we've been discussing, reauthorizes reinsurance, which is designed to hold down premium increases in the individual and small group insurance markets by having government pay some of the costs that otherwise would be paid by the private insurance companies. Reinsurance was created 5 years ago, and its proponents, of which I have frequently been one, claimed that it was a bridge program which would help consumers while a more lasting solution could be found. But we're 5 years in, and we haven't found a workable alternative. DFLers have routinely supported allowing people to buy into the very popular, very affordable, and a very effective Minnesota Care program, as we just did earlier in this hearing. But as was visible in this hearing, that's been opposed every turn at every turn by our friends on the other side of the aisle. With the original 5 years having run out, we have a choice to make. Do we walk away from reinsurance and risk seeing premiums suddenly increase? Under the American Rescue Plan, the federal government's paying premium costs above 7% of income for all enrollees, which makes health insurance premiums more affordable. But that protection is set to expire unless Congress agrees to extend it in the Build Back Better plan, which I've already plugged once today. With inflation at a four-decade high, with COVID still a threat, with extra premium subsidies set to expire, now is not the time to leave consumers without protection. Families are hurting, and we should do everything we can to keep them covered and protect them from sudden increases in their healthcare costs. This bill reauthorizes reinsurance, but after the amendments, corrects some of the most substantial flaws in the original program. And I won't discuss those amendments as we did them extensively, but I think we just dramatically improved the quality of the program for Minnesotans. So with that, Madam Chair, I know we have several members of the public who signed up to testify, and I look forward to listening to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So first on the list, we have Peter Brickwitty with the Department of Commerce. Mr. Brickwitty, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the record. Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner at the Commerce Department. The department appreciates the House taking swift action to begin moving this proposal through the legislative process. Members are aware that the governor's budget includes a continuation of the reinsurance program, and the department stands ready to work with the legislature to successfully extend the program this session. As you know, in late December, the department, as directed by the legislature last year, submitted the state's initial 1332 waiver continuation request. And as expected, federal regulators replied indicating that the state's application was incomplete. Those federal partners have invited the state to update our submission and resubmit. In order for the state's 1332 waiver to be extended, the state must demonstrate that the reinsurance program has been authorized to operate in at least 2023, and the state can pay for its expected share of the program's expenses. To allow enough time for the state's 1332 waiver continuation request to be reviewed and approved before state law requires final rates to be made public on or about October 1st, we need at least legislative authorization for the program to exist in 2023 by April 1st of this year. This timeline tracks with the one on which we successfully created the reinsurance program originally back in 2017. The enabling legislation became law on April 4th, and the state received word from federal regulators that the program could operate on September 22nd. Respecting Chair Stevenson's comments at the outset of his remarks about paying for the cost of the program, I'll keep my remarks on the payment side a relatively brief, just two notes or items of note for committee members to keep in the back of your head as those discussions move forward. One, the governor's budget does contain an assessment mechanism to pay for the state's share of the program, and that model, which is employed by two states already, Maryland and our neighbors in North Dakota, is based on the assessment used to fund MCHA when it was the state's high-risk pool in its earlier incarnation. I'd also note that there are operational impacts. Chair Stevenson spoke to the Minnesota Care impacts in his earlier amendment, and I would also note the MNSURE has operational impacts due to the existence of the program that we'll need to address as we move forward. I'd also state that the department appreciates the amendments that have been added to the bills today in committee that take important steps towards addressing healthcare costs and addressing other barriers to access and care, and we look forward to working with the House on those items as well. I'll close by saying that the department staff are working to update our fiscal note to reflect the numbers from the February forecast released yesterday. And with that, Madam Chair, thanks for the opportunity to speak, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brickwitty. Representative Haley, I see your hand raised. Do you have a question that needs to be answered now, or wait until the discussion?
I have a question for Commissioner Brickwitty, if I could.
Sure, go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, maybe I didn't hear it right, but I wanted to clarify. Did CMS communicate to us that legislative authorization is needed, but not the funding mechanism? I was under the understanding that we needed both.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, we do ultimately need both, and I'd be happy to provide you with a copy of the letter that CMS sent back to the state. It specifically identified two items, one related to required public comment period, which we did not hold, knowing that we were going to be submitting an incomplete application. We will hold that once we have the legislative authorization in hand, but then also specifically identified the legislative authorization issue in its letter. So we do ultimately as a state need to demonstrate our ability to pay for the years of the program in which it's going to operate. In 2017, we understood from federal regulators that we needed to pay for all of the years up front, but subsequent states that came behind us and were approved for their reinsurance programs have adopted other models. So I think, you know, to Chair Stevenson's point, I think this is going to be a conversation that's sort of ongoing. And as we finalize the fiscal note along with our other agencies, there are a lot of cost components that go into it beyond just the expense of operating the program and what that's projected to be over the course of the five-year waiver.
Thank you, Commissioner. So, Madam Chair.
Representative Haley.
So for our April 1st deadline then, we need the authorization from the legislature and just the funding for the addition of the year in front of us and not the full 5 years.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, I think if we can get to agreement on all of those things, it would be great to do all of that by April 1st. I think the thing that I'm trying to articulate here is that we need, in order for our waiver application to stay on time, for federal regulators to be able to process the continuation waiver, that we need that authorization to operate in 2023 in hand by April 1st so we can get to work on resubmitting. But again, I would say that it would be in everyone's interest to try to, I think, address this over the long term as quickly as we can in this session, as we did in 2017 when we originally authorized the program to exist.
Thank you, Mr. Brickley. Chair, Representative Haley.
Thank you.
So members, next on the list for testifiers, we have Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Graves, if you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, my name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I won't recount the comments I made earlier about the importance of health insurance as a benefit to employers and employees. But I would just note that I do from time to time get questions about what interest employers have in a market stability mechanism for the individual market, given that most employers, you know, provide coverage for their employees in the group market. And it's a few reasons. First and foremost, the individual market is a very important outlet for self-insured individuals and also for entrepreneurs and their families. But increasingly, it's also becoming an important outlet for small and mid-sized employers and frequently employers of all sizes to turn to for coverage for themselves and their employees. And this is becoming especially true in the last couple of years as the federal government has made increased allowances for employers to help their employees buy their own insurance in the individual market. And just to kind of underscore this point, in a survey of our members just this summer, already just in the couple of years that this has been available as an option, already 6% of our members reported that they are using these kind of defined contribution arrangements to help their employees gain coverage. 1 in 10 of our members who currently offer coverage reported that if healthcare costs continue to increase at the current rate, that they will consider these options going forward to maintain coverage for their employees. And then nearly 30% of our members who don't currently offer coverage indicated they are actively looking at these defined contribution arrangements to extend coverage to their employees. So these kinds of emerging market trends in our minds provide all the more reason to maintain a healthy, stable individual health insurance market. And reinsurance, frankly, has done just that. It has brought stability to the market. It has lowered rates. Rates are anywhere from 20 to more than 30% lower than what they otherwise would be, depending on the type of metal level product somebody buys in the market. And we also know that rates would increase significantly next year if the program isn't in place. So I want to thank Chair Stevenson for bringing this forward and for the thoughtful conversation discussion around this proposal today. We want to offer our full support to getting this done and to the assistant commissioner's point, getting done quickly. I'm happy to stand for questions. And again, just want to reiterate our strong support for this moving forward. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Next, we have John Reynolds with NFIB. If you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is John Reynolds. I'm State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. NFIB is Minnesota's largest small business organization, and 75% of our members have fewer than 10 employees. First, thank you to Chair Stevenson for carrying House File 3717. We appreciate the bipartisan support for this highly successful program. As Mr. Graves noted, the individual market is important to the Minnesota small business community and is the source of coverage for many small employers, their employees, and self-employed entrepreneurs. Instability and rising premiums in the individual market are bad for small businesses, as we witnessed from 2014 through 2017. Fortunately, beginning in 2018, the reinsurance program reversed the years-long trend of double-digit premium increases for individual market enrollees. It also halted a half-decade-long drop in the number of people insured through the market. According to a September 2021 review of Minnesota's reinsurance program by the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, reinsurance reduced the lowest cost bronze plan by 22%, the lowest cost silver plan by 34%, the second lowest cost silver plan by 36%, and the lowest cost gold plan by 31%. Reinsurance helps offset a relatively large share of high cost claims in the individual market. In other words, reinsurance helps pay for healthcare for very sick people. Almost two-thirds, 62% of eligible enrollees with reinsurance claims had two or more serious health conditions. According to the 2020 year-end reinsurance report, the top five conditions for which reinsurance helped cover the cost of care were diabetes, asthma, COPD, rheumatoid arthritis, metastatic cancer, and heart arrhythmia. In this sense, as others have noted, reinsurance serves a similar purpose to the program run by the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association from 1976 through 2014. MCHA enjoyed broad bipartisan support until it was discontinued. With regard to funding, small businesses and their employees in the individual and small group markets already pay multiple state taxes on health insurance premiums. This includes a 1% gross premiums tax that adds more than $100 million to the cost of health insurance, and 3.5% MinSure premium tax that adds over $20 million to certain individual policies. Because the combined enrollment in the small group and individual markets has declined by over 40% in the last 15 years, additional fixed assessments would have an outsized financial impact on these plans' affordability. As CMS noted, Minnesota's reinsurance program makes such an impact in part because of the reliance on broad funding sources from outside of the individual market. Lastly, we appreciate that reinsurance continues to be transparent and accountable, as governed by a longstanding state board and regularly audited at both the state and federal levels. Again, thank you to Chair Stevenson for carrying this important legislation. We urge the committee to continue the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Next, we have Bob Stein, the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters and the Agents Coalition. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Bob Stein, and I'm an independent insurance agent serving individual and small employer customers here in the Twin Cities and around the state of Minnesota. I'm here today representing an agents coalition, which includes four professional agent associations in Minnesota, including Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, the Professional Insurance Agents, and Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers. Collectively, we represent over 54,000 licensed insurance agents throughout Minnesota. Our agents represent 2.25 million Minnesotans covered by private market. And we closely work with the group and individual market consumers on a daily basis. We strongly support House File 3717 to extend the reinsurance program. And we thank Representative Stevenson for his authorship of the bill and Governor Walz for including it in his supplemental budget. The individual marketplace is not only the where individuals and their families get coverage when they do have access to employer-sponsored coverage. It's where entrepreneurs get their coverage when they start a new business. It's also relied upon individuals between jobs and early retirees. When the ACA moved 27,000 sick people from the MCHA program to the individual market, the premium pack drove huge price increases and carriers were leaving the individual market. And consumers, our clients and your constituents, were getting headline-making double-digit premium increases. Without this program, it was uncertain if any carriers would have chosen to continue offering coverage to this market segment at all. We do, however, have significant concerns about reinstituting the MCHA assessment. The fully insured market has been shrinking for years, and now, according to Minnesota Department of Health, makes up just 16.3% of the market. So putting such a tax on small market segments offsets much of the benefit of reinsurance, since the group paying it is not much larger than the individual market itself. The largest employers will not contribute anything to this program, which compensates the individual market for the adverse selection it bears for the entire market. We encourage you to consider the broader funding sources that reflect the benefit of the of this program to all Minnesotans. We support the creation of this plan, and we are here to report back to you today that the premium security plan that you passed in 2017 is working, and it needs to be continued and made permanent, hopefully. When the program is was first implemented, according to Minnesota Department of Commerce, this plan resulted in premiums being 20% lower in 2018 than without the plan. All the benefit of this program goes directly to consumers, as shown through the rate filings of the carriers. In fact, no funding really goes to the bottom line of insurance carriers, since they can only make a claim for actual medical losses and are then reimbursed by the MCHA, which administers the plan. They cannot receive any reimbursement for their overhead and administrative costs. Consumers, your constituents, benefit directly through the lower premiums. So I ask you to please support this bill to help keep stability in this vital program for individuals and families. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Finally, members, we have Lucas Smith with the Council of Health Plans. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Lucas Nessie. I'm the President and CEO of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, a trade association that represents Minnesota's nonprofit plans, including Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, Medica, UCare, and Sanford Health Plan. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today in support of extending the reinsurance program. I'll do my best not to repeat the previous testimony that's been detailed but accurate in our opinion about a program that was created to stabilize the market and lower premiums for people buying insurance on their own. It does so by paying a portion of high-cost medical bills, a cost that otherwise must be billed into premiums, as Mr. Stein just testified to. Under Minnesota's reinsurance program in place today and is proposed to be extended, those high-cost bills are still paid by health plans, but they then submit documentation to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association to request partial reimbursement, effectively taking a portion of those high-cost claims out of the premium equation. The association ensures program integrity by contracting with an independent actuarial firm and makes public on their website the quarterly and annual reports examining the program's operations. The reinsurance program has performed as advertised. The individual market has been much more stable, and at its broadest scope, reinsurance has successfully lowered programs by an average of 20% compared to what premiums would be without the program in place. The CMS report recently released on the 2020 plan year revealed that an additional 89,000 Minnesotans had coverage in 2020 thanks to the reinsurance program being in place. Conversely, if reinsurance is not extended in 2023, those costs are built back in with much higher premiums. The Minnesota Department of Commerce projects as many as 15,000 Minnesotans will go without coverage next year. Reinsurance is a proven program that stabilizes the market and lowers premiums. It has resulted in tens of thousands of additional Minnesotans having access to needed care. The program has been so successful, 15 other states have enacted reinsurance programs over the past several years, and Congresswoman Andy Craig is one of the leading advocates for creating a federal reinsurance program. The council thanks Chair Stevenson for his leadership on this issue, as well as the others on this committee that have authored this in the past, and urges committee support to continue Minnesota's successful program. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and I can stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nessie. Members, we will move to discussion. Representative Lucero, your hand is up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate some of the testifiers giving us or reminding us of some of the background of why we're even having this conversation. And one of the things that I heard among the testifiers was stabilizing the market, the need to stabilize the market. And so just for the benefit of those who may have forgotten, I think it's very important that we in addition to what we heard with the historical perspective, the additional truths regarding why we're having this conversation, why we have why we have a destabilized market. And that is because Obamacare created this problem. The promises were an average annual savings per family of $2,500 per year. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your health plan, you can keep your health plan. These and many other promises were broken by former President Obama and Democrats. And they have destabilized the market, moving MCHA to the individual market. We had a phenomenal system here in Minnesota where there were those with conditions that were beyond their control that we were taking care of with the MCHA program. But Obamacare destroyed the solution we had here in Minnesota that helped people. And now we're in a position where we saw, as one of the other historical perspectives we were reminded of, double digit premium increases. I remember the pre-Obamacare days when my monthly insurance premium was less than $100 for a family. And now what is it, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 plus? And so government created this problem. They destabilized the market, necessitating this conversation. So I just think it's important that members of this committee are reminded of why we're even here discussing this, because Democrats destabilized the market. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps this is a question for the author, or a short series of questions, if I may. I've reviewed the bill, and I'll admit I'm a little challenged with quite the volume of amendments that we added to the bill and trying to track all the interactions. But I'm not, in the interest of public transparency, I'm not seeing a list of beneficiaries. Who is going to be receiving the money that will eventually flow through this bill? Is there a public list, Mr. Chair?
Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Dabney. And I think Mr. Brickwitty might be able to answer your question more effectively, but I believe that on an annual basis, there is a report on who receives funding out of the reinsurance program. And I think based on the entities that are participating in the MNsure marketplace, we can have a understanding of who will be receiving money going forward. But I would defer to Mr. Brickwitty or some other expert to give you a more technical answer to your question.
Mr. Brickwitty, you turn your camera back on. Please proceed.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, the general answer is that reinsurance payments are made to eligible health insurance companies in the state of Minnesota. I would refer you or members to the MCHA fourth quarter 2021 report, which is available on their website, or we could provide to you, that has an estimated reinsurance amount and claimants by product line for the individual companies receiving, estimated to what they would receive in 2021.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Brickwitty. And if I can ask Mr. Brickwitty an additional question. Do we have a list? So the money goes to those health insurance companies, the subsidy goes to them, and then they move it out from there. Do we have a list of all the partners, all the vendors that they use, so that we can track the flow of this public money? I'm concerned about fraud. We know that, despite in some cases the state's best efforts, there's been issues of fraud in some public subsidy programs. And I would be concerned about fraud in this program if there isn't transparency and accountability. Mr. Brickwitty, do we have a list? Does the public get to know all of the partners to these subsidy receivers?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I think I would defer to the individual plans for your question on a list of vendor partners. I would say that the existing law requires MSHA to maintain an auditor under contract and to perform an annual audit of dollars that are expended. The dollars, the program, as members know, also is partially funded through federal funding, which makes the program also subject to the federal single audit on an annual basis. So the Office of the Legislative Auditor is involved in reviewing that, and I believe that happens on an annual basis, although I would need to go back and confirm that with my staff since I don't personally participate in that process. But I think there is strong confidence in the integrity of the dollars as they are transferred to MSHA for distribution on an annual basis for this program. But to your specific question about a list of vendors, I would defer to the individual health plans on that regard. That's not something that the Commerce Department would have on hand.
Madam Chair?
Chair Stevenson.
I would just, in response to Chair Dabney's question, and I share his concern about fraud and insurance fraud generally, and that's why I'm hopeful that we can all support Representative Lislegard's bill to add five special agents in the Commerce Fraud Bureau, which does excellent work exactly to this point. And so I just wanted to emphasize Representative Lislegard has a great bill that's directly to your concern.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Representative Dabney, any follow-up?
Oh, Madam Chair, and maybe this one is for the author. How do we avoid this public subsidy? I guess two questions. One, I don't see any accountability that assures us that once we subsidize the insurance companies, that they'll actually use those dollars to hold down premiums. Is there a mechanism that I don't understand or that I'm not seeing in the bill or appreciating if it's in the language there that assures taxpayers that this subsidy actually goes to subsidize insurance premiums and not, for instance, executive salaries?
Chair Stevenson?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, it's not in the bill, but there is a mechanism. And the terminology, I think, is the medical loss ratio, which federal law provides that requires that health insurance companies have to be at, is it 85%? Some people are on the Zoom. I'm hoping I'll see a nod from somebody. But there is a limit in federal law that would prevent them from just pocketing this money.
Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. And I recognize that now that you mention it. I was just struck, the Star Tribune annually does its 100 largest nonprofits in Minnesota and then documents the executive compensation in those nonprofits. And I looked through it a bit this afternoon, and the top 12 nonprofits in Minnesota are all healthcare. Health Partners, the executive there got a $2.4 million salary last year, a 17% increase in compensation. Blue Cross Blue Shield's CEO receives $1.7 million, a 37% increase in executive salaries. The Fairview Corporation CEO, over $3 million, a 91% increase in executive salaries. We've heard bits and pieces today about concerns about inflation on the original bill, but I have a hard time believing that a 91% increase isn't going to contribute to healthcare inflation. UCARE, sorry, Mr. I believe it was Uland, I think was here from healthcare or from UCARE earlier. His boss got a 22% increase in salary last year. And Mr. Chair, these aren't the folks who provide anything of value. If I'm hospitalized or a loved one is hospitalized, the president of Alina isn't going to come by and hold my hand, isn't going to come by and order the tests that my physician needs to diagnose what ails me or the treatment for that. And yet we're seeing massive increases in salaries in a publicly subsidized system. And Mr. Chair, I'll end here, but what I wanted, some of the questions I had about who are the recipients and who are their partners and concerns about fraud goes back to when Representative Richardson brought her bill before the committee to fund an organization led by an African-American woman on economic, providing greater equity in our economic system. And suddenly there was all sorts of questions about who were they and where were their financials and who were their partners and what about fraud? Questions that aren't being asked today. And I just find it striking. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Yes, Representative Stevenson.
I did just want to point, Representative Dabney, I associate myself with your remarks entirely. I agree with you wholeheartedly on everything that you articulated, in particular about the problems that we have with excessive compensation. I did want to note, because several people have texted me, that there is existing statute, it's 62E.23 subdivision 1 paragraph D, which relates to the Premium Security Council reinsurance. It says the board must not use any funds for staff retreats, promotional giveaways, excessive executive compensation, promotion of federal or state legislative regulatory changes. Clearly that's not enough based on what you were saying earlier, and there's a lot more work to be done, but I did just want, several people texted me that statute citation, and I wanted to put it out there since it's to the point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair.
And members, we have two folks still on the list in discussion. We do need to move to a vote by 4:30. So Representative Haley and Representative Driscoll, if you could keep your comments short.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just briefly to Representative Dabney's question, there is a report published every quarter by the MSHA board. You might want to take a look at that. It's quite comprehensive and might answer some of your questions. And I also believe that it is the Commerce Department that oversees this department and actually appoints the MSHA board. So that would be another place to look. I wanted to speak in support of this bill, and thank you, Chair Stevenson, for bringing it forward. I represent a part of the state that pays the highest insurance costs of anywhere in the state. So I just want you to wrap your heads around a farmer, a family farmer, husband, wife, four kids. They pay $10,000 to $15,000 deductible on a $30,000 to $40,000 annual insurance cost without reinsurance. On the low end, if it goes up 25%, that'll be $37,500 a year. On the high end, and this again, is we've talked about these rates already today, 36% increase, they'd pay $40,800 a year. This program works. It supports Minnesotans who get very, very, very sick and covers a percentage of that cost for their medical care so that that cost doesn't get spread out to the rest of Minnesotans. It's proven. We've been doing it for years, and we lead the nation in this model. It's well audited and well run. And this has bipartisan, bicameral support. And we are up against an April 1st deadline, as you heard from the Commerce Department themselves. So I really appreciate Chair Stevenson bringing it forward. I am in full support of the bill. I will be voting no today because of the amendments that were added on. I know the bill has other stops in other committees, and so I hope it comes back, Chair Stevenson, in a clean bill that is just wrapped around the reinsurance program, and that we can deal with some of those other issues, you know, as separate legislation. So thank you for the time, Madam Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I want to underscore what Representative Haley just talked about. There is bipartisan, bicameral support. We've seen this in the past. This is not the bill that's ready for prime time.
I do hope that as it continues to move through the process, that it comes back in a form that we can get bipartisan and bicameral support for this very important and crucial program. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Chair Stevenson, closing remarks?
I'll keep it very brief in light of the time. I do just want to, in response to what Representative Lucero was saying, I do want to note that in Minnesota alone, the Affordable Care Act gave insurance to 335,787 people who didn't have it before, cutting the uninsured rate in Minnesota in half. That's probably why the Affordable Care Act is very popular and why Republicans were unable to repeal it when they had unified control of government under President Trump. And so I'd ask members to vote yes on this bill today.
Hearing no further discussion, I will move that House File 3717, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Chair Cotiza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
O'Driscoll, no. Representative Barr.
No, thank you.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Pass.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Kegel.
Aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Listlegard.
Aye.
Listlegard, aye. Representative Lucero.
No.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
No.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson is excused. Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
Tice, no. And Representative Dabney?
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails and House File 3717, as amended, is recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And members, we are adjourned.